Hey everybody, it's about 9:29 and it's time for Conversation with John Orr, and I'm hoping you're all doing well on this Friday at the end of a rather hectic week for the election, and that's over. So the topic today on the Conversation with John Orr, there it is, will be the midterms. What's your reaction? What are your reactions? What are your thoughts? How do you feel about it? Do you have any feelings? Do you give a hoot? Or are you just done with it? Are you completely done with it? Well, we're hoping you have some opinions. Could give us a call here on the Conversation, KMUN. 503-325-0010. Please give us a call. That's that number again, 503-325-0010. So if you have opinions, comments, thoughts, worries, concerns, you want to process stuff, this is your place. This is it. Give us a call. Well, one thing that, you know, I was touching on in a couple of my broadcasts was concerns about participation of the electorate. Last week's show was about millennial participation, and it does look like that it does look like there was a 16% increase in the number of first-time voters in the 2018 midterm. I think that's a really good sign. You know, I have a pretty active presence on Facebook. I try to pick and choose what I think are the best, most informed and reliable commentaries and illuminating news stories. And what I tried to do was just put out the information about the status of elections, our voting, our glitches in our voting. The glitches in our voting are pretty obvious in a lot of places. For those of you who don't know it, Oregon is exceptional in a number of ways. We have the highest voter participation rate in the country, but we also make it the easiest to vote of anywhere in the country. Contrast that with Georgia or Florida or Arizona or Ohio or any number of states where it appears that the desire for power and the manipulation of the process, at least from news accounts, by, for example, the Secretary of State, another example, Brian Kemp, Secretary of State, also running for governor against Stacey Abrams, apparently purging the heck out of the voter rolls. You know, concern for voter fraud, and, you know, what we have are box of ballots being found in the janitor's closet, the wrongful purging, it just runs against democracy. So that's one takeaway for the 2018 midterms, is that we need an extensive, comprehensive overhaul of the way we vote, and the Oregon model would be the way. Your thoughts? Give us a call, 503-325-0010. I hope everybody is doing well on this nice Friday morning in November. So just to kill the time while I wait for our dedicated listeners to the Conversation and on this radio broadcast, I'd be happy to share with you my takeaways. I've got about 15 of them. One of them I just mentioned, a couple of them. One was increased voter participation rate. Another one was the need for a major overhaul on a national level, maybe with federal guidance, although realistically I don't expect to see our divided Congress anytime soon uniting behind the concept of making it easier for folks to vote. How revolutionary would that be? Well, it seems fairly fundamental, but it's all about power, or so it seems, in the opposition winner-loser model of our political parties and our political system. But I guess it's always kind of been that way, but I think when you make it difficult for people to vote, they're reluctant to vote, they're having to wait in lines, they're not getting a day off. Somebody suggested substituting a voter day for Columbus Day. That sounds like a capital idea to me. But other takeaways here on the Conversation with John Orr, awaiting your calls, your comments, your questions, your maybe one of the biggest ones was women taking power. We'll come back to that in a moment. But that was obviously a significant development both in Congress and in the state legislatures. Big news. And a lot of the women in an article I read, I think it was The Times, said that this was not a matter of solicitation. These women just wanted to go for it, and they ran it. They ran good campaigns. They spoke to the voters in issues and apparently connected them with them in a way that they trusted more than their opposition candidates, be they women or be they men. So I think that's a promising trend because, well, I hate to say this, but, you know, guys have had their chance and they made a good hash of it. That doesn't mean politics is dictated by the person's gender, but it may be a person's communications skills. Maybe they might be gender related. I don't know. Give me a call if you disagree. Let's see. Other takeaways. What do we got here? We got a flashing light here. Yeah, there it is. So, other takeaways. Suburban voters. Suburban voters are swinging to the Democratic Party. Another takeaway. Oh, okay. So hold on. We'll come back to that. Let's take a call. This is The Conversation. Hello? This is The Conversation with John Orr. Okay. Well, that's interesting. Let me figure out what the deal is here. Okay, stand by, caller. Okay, wait. Okay, we're working on a little technical difficulty there, so we appreciate your patience. So anyway, I would say that the women taking power is the third of the takeaways from the election. Trying to get we lost the caller. I am so sorry about that. We've been having our difficulties here at the station. Not sure the nature of this one. Anyway, carrying on. Suburban voters swinging Democratic. Rural voters, they seem to be swinging red. swinging red, going red. Blue-collar voters swinging red, going Republican. Another takeaway. Checks and balances restored. That's a good thing. We need that. Another takeaway. Voters are, on the statewide level, rejecting all the new the new measures except for the one that involved funding for affordable housing. So that's a good thing. I mean, affordable housing is definitely a priority. We're still trying to straighten out the phone thing here. So another takeaway is that the local jail initiative funding passed after two or three failures. The schools, Warrenton and Astoria. Okay, I think we got you now. Caller?
Yeah, same guy.
Thank you for your patience, and I did push that button. So, what's your comment about the elections, your reaction to the midterms?
Well, I'd say the national election is encouraging. I'm really mourning the fact that Jaime Herrera won again. She's been our representative since, I don't know, 2010 or something like that, and I have never heard her talk. She has never come to our county to talk to a public meeting. I have no idea how she presents herself. Anyway, that's a real bummer. But the real bummer is that the best place to be effective in politics is locally. And in my county, Pacific County, voter turnout was 50% in this important election. And as I did canvassing in our neighborhood, over and over again, people said, I'm not going to vote my vote won't count. The whole process is messed up. It's there is absolutely no faith in the system among a great proportion of people up here who had no intention of voting, and it just made my teeth grind.
I hear that. You know, the candidate Jamie Herrera Butler. You know, I think of myself as one who keeps informed, watches the news, and keeps an eye firmly on the Congress. And I got to say, I've never heard boo out of her on any issue, whether controversial or, you know, bringing home the bacon. I could be wrong, but I'm not aware of it. And I guess
I've heard a couple of things. I remember back 4 or 5 years ago, there was a report that because of the district she was in, the Republicans were going to allow her to vote against the bill unless they needed her vote.
Yeah.
That was one thing. And the other thing is, of course, her advertising, which I thought was just reprehensible.
But what was
hers? It was the National Republican Committee, and they spent lots of money.
Well, what offended you, caller, about the advertising of Congresswoman?
The way they misrepresented Carolyn Long's position and the way they tweaked the pictures to make her look evil.
Yeah. So unfortunately, that's kind of par for the course in this area. And it's always been sort of ridiculing your opponent. I mean, for hundreds of years, we've had that sort of, you know, politics is a rough sport. It is a contact sport.
I agree, but there's some areas where I think it's reprehensible to go, and one is the one you were talking about, the limiting the voter, taking people off the rolls behind their back, making college students ineligible to register in the university where they're studying, all the different measures they've done to keep people from voting, and it's really working.
I think it is. Well, particularly when you're dealing with very close margins, as we saw in Georgia and Florida and other places where a matter of 50,000 votes, the difference, you know, like 0.2% can make all the difference. That unfortunately seems to incentivize unscrupulous secretaries of state and election officials to tilt the balance. I mean, obviously, we live in a place where a lot of elected leaders or individuals and their parties are competitive in nature, and it's all about winning. We, you know, the Vince Lombardi, sorry that, you know, winning is the only thing. Maybe that unfortunately carries through, but there's got to be something that speaks to the larger patriotic duty to observe fair play and to play by the rules. And I don't know how that's going to happen unless there's just so much anger that there is a groundswell for reform of the way we vote, including leaving a paper trail. Duh. Making it easier for people to vote by not requiring them to come home or to go directly to the polls after an 8 or a 10 hour work shift.
I think back to Lincoln. You can't fool all the people all the time. Eventually, what goes round comes round. We've always been lucky in this country that it happens short of revolution, but we come awful close to revolution, and that may be a situation we're in now. I think the next 2 years are going to be fascinating on the national level. This is going to be a really bare knuckle fight, and I don't have much taste for it.
Yeah, I don't think anybody does. And the sad part of that is inaction on Congress or the petty and childish level of dialogue and squabbling that goes on between the parties is a turnoff. It's depressing, it's discouraging, disillusioning, and that can just reinforce people not coming to the polls. And my own personal opinion is that may be what some parties or, you know, parties of political persuasion would like. I think one thing that it really motivated turnout is there's perhaps a dawning sense that the minority is controlling the agenda, the minority of the voters, and the minority is taking actions perhaps at the expense of the majority. If the majority don't feel like they've got representation, well, then you have got the classic, you know, Boston Tea Party, not the Tea Party that got up on its hind legs after Obama's election.
Not the one the Kochs invented.
Yeah, if you're talking about taxation without representation, well,
it's Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, well, you got the $1.4 trillion budget deficit in a time of prosperity, and you know, you got to leave your powder dry for the cyclical recessions that come and go. And well, that's just going to be a lot more costly bill, and the price of borrowed money for operating the federal government comes at the expense of money that would go to other things when it's up to 20% of your budget is to pay holders of T-bills residing principally in China. Well, that's just trouble. That's just trouble. And, you know, maybe people will turn off, or maybe they will do as they did in this election, and people that haven't voted for showed up at the polls. I don't know. It'll be interesting to find out.
So, I think there's two things that have served the Republicans short term and have already lost their utility. One is the immigration fight, although it's, you know, definitely a big fight right now. But I think, and the other one is Obamacare. I think that's what really made the difference in the election was the people who are starting to realize that yes, Obamacare isn't perfect, but it's better than anything else. Like democracy, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, and that is something I picked up on the media is that the strategy and the outcome that restored Congress to restored the House of Representatives to the Democrats was harping on health care, the issue that they stayed away from in droves in 2010 and then lost, they lost their majority.
Yeah.
So, one takeaway from that is, the people that run campaigns, the ones that consult on them, may be a little out of touch with what wins, what appeals, what gets voters excited. And it's lunch bucket issues and I think the idea that pre-existing conditions with the health of this country, such as it is, was one of those issues that finally was represented in a way that got people motivated to vote and to vote Democratic. What do you think?
I think that's true. I think one of the, everybody's fond of pointing out the weaknesses of a democracy, but one of the strengths of democracy is when the ruling class starts building air castles in the sky that have no relation to reality and start making their own reality, as Bush's people said, the voters catch up with them because they're living reality. They don't need an artificial reality or a made-up one. And so in a democracy, there is that shock absorber.
Yeah, I hear that.
But it's not working very good right now. Well, maybe it is working good right now. We'll see.
Well, I know that a lot of us were feeling angst or disillusionment, but, I've been around long enough to know that the pendulum swings back and forth and back and forth. It swung, in 68 to Nixon and the moral majority, and quote unquote, and then it swung in 76 back to the Democrats in reaction to Watergate, and then swung back in 80. To the Republicans and the Reagan and the Morning America, and swung, this was a long swing and coming, to Bill Clinton and then to Bush and then to Obama. So it goes back and forth. There was a big turnover in Congress.
Obama was going to be the end of the white rule in the United States. What I wanted to say about that.
Well,
has not always worked well.
Yeah, well, that changeover in who controls the United States House of Representatives, it's pretty dramatic. Newt Gingrich fired up the country with his contract with America. Sometimes
and his determination to do whatever he could to win a majority rather than playing by the rules that they'd played by for the last 50 years.
Yeah,
That was the big thing with Gingrich, I thought. I remember what I wanted to say, and that was on in terms of these big swings. I have the impression that Trump, in 2 years, has made some huge swings, or at least they're looming. The change in our posture toward the world is dynamic, is dramatic to me, and alarming. The idea that the world order that sort of kept us from having a huge war is being undercut. You know, I see on the news maybe it really isn't. It's just the propaganda about it. I don't know. But that's one of them. The other one is the social order that FDR brought out of the Depression. So all that's being overturned by presidential fiat. But Congress has acquiesced so far.
Yeah, well, and hence the need for the checks and balances. And it would be encouraging if the vote...
The concern is whether he's been able to push it far enough that we're not going to be able to bring it back or find some sort of a stasis in the middle. You know, that whole idea between, you know, dialectics is the two sides conflict, and out of the conflict comes a new way. Yeah. And maybe we just have to wait for the new way, but we're certainly in a turbulent time, and I think I better hang up pretty soon because I'm starting to talk philosophy.
All right. Well, we really appreciate the call, and so you have a good day. And
I hope somebody else will call you because you certainly needed some help there.
Yeah, it's obvious. We've got the buttons lined up, I think. So thanks for your call again.
Okay, well, thanks for being on the air.
Okay,
bye.
So, yeah, we have the buttons under control here. And we would like to hear from some other callers this morning, 503-325-0010. This is The Conversation with John Orr. And we're talking about the midterms. What's your takeaway? What's your reaction? Did you like what you heard, or did you not like what you heard? And it looks like we got another call. Maybe this button will work this time. Is there anybody there?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. You got a call. You got a question. You got a comment. Fire away.
I have several comments. First, I think the racism issue is still a problem for us, especially with Steve King in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Racism, which has influenced a lot of the voter turnout.
Yeah, yeah. It is appealing to the more base instincts of the electorate. I have to agree that that works. You get that in television. You get that in... you get it that in talk radio, not this talk radio, of course, and you get, unfortunately, kind of a polarizing effect, and it's bad for democracy, I have to say. If people could reach out and think about how it looks, you know, from the vantage point of somebody else and put themselves in their shoes, if they could leave aside the emotion, if they could keep their minds open, if they could just listen to alternative sources of information, think critically. You know, my take on that is that perhaps our schools are not teaching people how to think critically, because if a voter has not been educated sufficiently in how to take, you know, separate BS from bona fide, well, they may not be making such great electoral choices, and I personally believe they've not been making the great electoral choices in the last couple of years.
I taught college courses for 47 years. And always focus on critical thinking. I think that is a significant problem because we rarely have courses taught in civics in which students are taught how to evaluate and reach rational conclusions about elections.
Yeah.
Now, there's another item I'd like to comment on, and that is the governorships, the pickup on governorships by the Democratic Party is encouraging because the governor has a great deal of say about the districting and issues like gerrymandering and fair proportioning of districts for election purposes.
Oh, absolutely.
Governors.
Yeah.
The other item is the encouraging results with the LGBT community. We have... the governor of Colorado is openly gay. We have Native American winners. We have Muslim winners in Minnesota. That's encouraging because it gives us a better representation of the population.
Absolutely. You know, I heard on the issue of what it implicitly is gerrymandering and how the power of the governor, regardless of party, who's in power can and often, too often, does manipulate the configuration of those districts so they look like Rorschach tests, or they take on, you know, humorous shapes like an Italian boot or maybe almost looking like the Philippines. That being said, it's an encouraging response in the state of Michigan. I think this might have been in response to former AG Eric Holder and former President Obama. to pass an initiative that requires that after the census, the new boundaries for congressional districts are done by independent commission rather than by the presiding governor of the state. I mean, that's just such a no-brainer. And that doesn't mean there's not going to be conflict between, you know, people in a room. I suppose you have an odd number.
Right.
But certainly take it out of the hands of a Republican or a Democrat in power who has a built-in bias, the same kind of bias that puts to doubt the reliability and the faith people can put in an election for the governor of the state of Georgia.
Well, we also need to do something about the secretaries of state running for office in an election where they control the voting. That's Kansas and Georgia in particular. There's a conflict of interest there that's so blatant, I can't understand why the courts allow that to happen.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, the courts, if it reaches some certain threshold, and you say you have a plaintiff like the American Civil Liberties Union, or a similar, they can file suit and say there's a violation of due process or the constitutional, right to vote. And it does seem as clear to me as it sounds like it's clear to you that there are some very troubling and wrong and unethical things that are allowed to go on year after year after year. I mean, there should always be a paper trail. Everybody who has a computer knows they shut down and they get glitched and they're capable of hacking. How do you reconcile that with the desire to have a true and accurate reading of the desires of the voter in the, you know, with their ballots in the voter's booth? And why
I'm
do you need a voter's booth?
Some hope, though, that Americans will come to their senses and realize they're voting against their own best interests, pocketbook issues, for example, and instead succumbing to those social issues that the Republicans are using to divert our attention from their lack of progress in terms of helping the poor and the middle class.
Hmm. Well, I think you raise a valid point there, too. Now, are you a Washington or Oregon citizen?
Washington Pacific County.
Washington Pacific County. Yeah, looking at Oregon, we approved by a 56-43% margin, allowing local bonds to finance affordable housing, and that seemed like a pretty big yes, because most people don't like the ideas of taxation. And another thing that kind of went against what seems like the prevailing winds as far as taxation and so forth was locally here in Clatsop County, we approved a new jail after three attempts.
That's good. That's a very important improvement.
Well, maybe yes, maybe no. I'll come back to that in a second. And then there, the Warrenton and Astoria school districts approved significant funding increases for their schools. The story behind that is there's more money than has ever gone to the education budget in Salem, but because of the PERS allocations and commitments, that money is not going to schools like it might appear on the face of it. It's not going to teachers. It's not going to programs. It's going to fund retirements. And, I'm not making an editorial commentary on the propriety or the need to compensate
public employees.
As a lifelong
learner and teacher for many, many years, I'm convinced that we need to support education. Teachers are underpaid and overworked.
Yeah. The thing is, some people who own their homes, when they go into retirement or fixed income, they are living on a budget. And I've heard from several people that while they support, this and that and the other thing, there comes a point where their taxes start going up to $6,000, $7,000 a year, and their limited means become even tighter. Some have even said that at some point this could make people have to sell their homes because they won't be able to afford homes. With rents being what they are, that could be a concern. I got to wrap this up, caller. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in, and I hope you'll join us again next week or some other time.
Thank you very much. Okay. I appreciate it.
You bet. Take care. Okay, so we probably got to look towards wrapping this up. I just really, you know, I wish I had a little more time to talk about what happened locally and in the state. The Oregon legislature now, as far as the House of Representatives, has a supermajority, 60%, that allows them to proceed with taxation. Taxation increase, perhaps, to finally tackle the problems with our budget, our $24 billion budget deficit. At any rate, this has been the conversation with John Orr, and we really appreciate all of those people that called in. Apologize for those who may have tried to call in, but were not successful. We'll be back next week, 9:30, for the conversation with John Orr.